never lose sight how important it is to be face-to-face with people, to meet people, just to get to know them, to form a relationship and understand them and understand what they like, what they don't like, and, you know, be kind, be nice, be fair. That's never going to go away. You can't replace that with a machine or technology.
Hi, I'm Vivek Kartha, and welcome to Deconstructed. Every episode, we're discussing the future of the world's largest asset class, real estate, through the eyes of the people who live and breathe it. Thank you for joining us, and let's get started. Today's episode is brought to you by Workspace. Workspace has built a better way to manage real estate without all the clicks. With a suite of modern, intuitive products for commercial real estate operators, Workspace reduces the friction between assets, data, and people, allowing CRE professionals to streamline all their daily operations across property management, asset management, and beyond. Learn more at www.goworkspace.com. Hi, everyone. We are here today with Jim Hancock, who is a Senior Vice President of Capital Markets at NAI Robert Lynn in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Jim, thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon, Vivek. Thanks for having me.
Well, I want to get right into it. I know you're based and you have deep roots in Texas and you're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Maybe give our listeners a little bit of a sense of what things look like on the ground now from a mobility, occupancy, just how does the city look and feel compared to 6 months ago, 12 months ago?
No, 6 months ago, maybe not a whole lot different, but maybe a year ago when COVID started, we were just as scared as everybody else was. But I think that as time rolled by, a lot of companies learned how to deal with the pandemic and, you know, coming into the offices and in their offices and different schedules. And our company, we came back in within a couple of months on an alternating schedule. And eventually, you know, we're all back now. We're all mostly vaccinated, probably 90% vaccinated. We're maskless and we don't ask who's vaccinated, but we just assume that most people are vaccinated in the office, and we are back to business. And you could probably say that for the most of the city is, I won't call it back to 100% normal, but there seems to be an exuberance of people getting out, going to restaurants, doing things that they've not been able to do for 15 months. And it seems like everywhere I turn, it's just every place is just as crowded as ever. And yeah. People just seem great to be alive and happy to be out again. So it's a very good feeling to be out.
I'd love to go deeper on that. And I will get into the asset classes specifically in a few minutes. But how do you think about the current point in time for the Dallas-Fort Worth real estate market? And I know it's nuanced and I know there's differences by asset classes, but is this a growing time? Is it contractionary? Is it up and down? And sort of comparing it to your prior experiences and other recessions and other world events.
Well, the current time we're in is not like any time I've ever seen. I've been in the business for 36 years. This has just, you know, been incredible, just the amount of growth that we've had. You know, maybe just a little bit of a slowdown during the, you know, the peak of COVID, but overall, you know, without getting specific about asset classes, which we'll do later, things are just opening up. There's we still have tremendous job growth. We have tremendous population growth. We seem to have a lot of there's a lot of companies still moving to town. The city is a, you know, we always talk about the main things that you put in the back of the offering memorandum about, you know, the background of the, you know, the why Dallas Fort Worth, et cetera. Just, you know, it's basically a central time zone, good airport, or in the middle of the country. You can get anywhere from here within a couple of days, truck driving. You know, we're probably 90% of the population. And it's a low cost state. There's no income tax. Although we do have some pretty high property taxes, but, you know, generally speaking, I won't call it the Wild West, but, you know, it's a can-do state with a good attitude.
Yeah. Well, I think that explosive growth and speaking about it's a time like you've never seen before lines up well with something I saw on the NAI Robert Lynn website, which is 2020 had 1,000 plus transactions. And I think for an outsider, they might hear that and think 2020, that was a terrible year for businesses all over the place. How is that possible? How is that possible?
2020 was a record year for us by a pretty good amount. Probably for the most part, we had a lot of industrial transactions. A lot of it, we had seven industrial leasing guys here that made over $1 million. These are the leasing guys. And the activity has just been astounding, mainly because of industrial. Maybe a little bit less robust on the office and retail side, but now as we speak, those parts of our business are picking up in a pretty marked pace as well.
Let's just start with the industrial market as a whole. And for people that are less steeped in commercial real estate, what's going on with industrial? Why is it so hot right now?
Dallas is, I forget, the third or the fourth largest industrial market in the country. We have close to 1 billion square feet of industrial space that's on the ground. And that's because, you know, Dallas, like I was saying before, Dallas, Fort Worth is kind of in the middle of the country. There's a, it's within a very close travel distance of a large segment of the U.S. population. The cost of doing business here is low. The lease rates are low or lower than in a lot of parts of the country, although there's a lot of upward pressure now on lease rates and building prices. But the you know, the pandemic, obviously the demand in industrial real estate is really caused by, you know, a couple of things. One is just pure population growth and demand, and then the other part is, you know, the new way that we do business. And that's, you know, you see that maybe a few years ago, maybe the retail sales were maybe 10% online, and now they're really getting close to the high 20% range. And there's a metric, I think the CBRE research folks came up with, that every, I forget how many billion dollars in retail sales there are, it creates 1.3 million square feet of industrial demand. You know, we could Google that and look it up, and I'm sure it's somebody could look it up and, you know, to see if we, you know, if we have a certain amount of growth in online sales, it creates just that much more demand in industrial space. So it's really not just the retail that's causing the demand. It's just the business services. You know, whenever you have rooftops, you know, we have residential growth in the suburbs. You got to have service centers. You got to have you know, last mile distribution to provide services to those communities. So it's really growth to provide for our local population as well as distribution center, almost like an inland port to, you know, distribute goods from other parts of the country. We have one of the largest inland ports here in the country. We have a couple of they're called intermodal yards that have, you know, these containers come off ships in L.A. and Long Beach, and they get stuck on a train just immediately, and they get shipped all the way from L.A. To south of Dallas, and they clear customs there, and so that's where the freight comes in, and it gets, you know, distributed throughout the country from that point. As far as demand is going, you know, I think the first quarter we absorbed, you know, about 10 million square feet of industrial space just in the first quarter. So we're, you know, at the current pace, we might absorb 40 million square feet of space of net absorption. And the construction is just going crazy here. There's over 40 million square feet under construction. And every developer in the country that you can think of, that there's people I've never even heard of before that are now in the Dallas market trying to look for sites. And the developable sites that are, you know, that you can build a warehouse on or a distribution center are just getting further and further away from, you know, from the central core, and which is making the central core type property or the, you know, the infill industrial very expensive. And, you know, the occupancy rates are extremely high. You know, high for us means, you know, maybe, you know, 95% occupancy. That's very high. So I've seen the vacancy rates in the teens in my career. And so I've never seen an occupancy rate this low. Just tremendous demand out there.
Is it a good time to be a buyer or a seller of industrial? with all that advice?
Well, for sure, it's a great time to be a seller. And, you know, we could be looking back, a year from now and thinking, gosh, I wish I would have sold, or I wish I could have bought more, or I wish I could have sold more. And we don't know. But I think right now it's definitely, it's on the seller's advantage when they're selling a property, because their prices are just incredibly high. If you're a buyer, it's extremely competitive to get a hold of the deal. The cap rates are, at least by our standards, are extremely low. The core assets, the newly constructed, or, you know, with great tenants, and they're trading in the, you know, cap rates below 4% in some cases. And then some of the non-core assets, you know, mid-80s, multi-tenant infill industrial properties are trading in the low 5% range. And in my career, I've seen the cap rates, you know, as high as 12% for something like that.
Is a way to think about that then that folks who have historically been deep in industrial, like your team, are not necessarily replacing their portfolio like for like with industrial, or is it more nuanced than that?
You know, it's funny. You see, what makes this business hard, you know, it sounds wonderful if you're a broker, but the difficult part, you know, what I do, I don't really concentrate on the portfolio type business. I concentrate on usually the private equity or the smaller trades, you know, say between $2 to $15 million. And those are generally private investors, or maybe one-off deals, you know, one single building, maybe a couple in some cases. A lot of those sellers, there's a big resistance to even though they see the price just being crazy and wondering whether will ever stay this high, or they have a fear of reinvestment, or, the fear of trying to find another property to replace it in a 1031 trade. So you might approach somebody and then they might fully agree with you, but sitting in that, when you tell them that the property is worth, you know, $110 a square foot and it's probably going to trade at a 5 cap, and they say, well, that's great, that's fantastic, I only paid, you know, $50 for it 2 years ago, but what am I going to buy? You know, if I sell, I'm going to pay a capital gain tax. So there's a big fear about what to do if they sell, which, you know, is sort of ironic. But I think everybody in real estate, even if you're selling houses, you know, you wonder, well, if you sell your house for, like, you live in California, you probably sell a house, a starter home begin at $1 million, you know, so where are you going to live if you sell your house? So that's the question for those guys. As far as the institutional investors, you know, they're buying and selling stuff all the time in different parts of the country. And so they just, you know, for whatever reason, you know, timing wise, they decide to take some chips off the table and sell. But what I see is more, you know, on my side is more, you know, direct emotional, and maybe one or two people making the decision instead of a, you know, investment committee. But, you know, there's maybe more some emotion involved on what am I going to do with this big gain that I've got here. I don't want to pay the tax.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that story from individual investors, from homeowners. It's a record time to sell. And then you turn around and you say, well, I've got a bunch of money, I can't buy anything.
It's like, now it's great if you don't plan to buy anything. You know, if you plan to go ahead and, you know, let's just assume that nothing happens to the long-term capital gains tax. So it's maybe a great time to sell, you know, if that's the case, and maybe the long-term capital gains tax will be as low as it's ever going to get. Maybe this is a great time to sell. So you could also take that argument. I mean, some people I talk to have, and some people believe that whatever happens in Washington, it's going to be retroactive back to, I think, April or something like that. And they're worried about the, you know, just taking a big hit for that as well. You know, if you have any objection to listing a property you're putting on the market or whatever, it's an overwhelming first objection to get to is, or to overcome is, you know, what am I going to do? And so that's a challenging, because you got to have, you know, think about things to sell them or trade into, or maybe even talk about going to a different market that has a higher cap rate. You know, maybe that's a strategy that some people do. You know, there's a lot of people that are based here in the Dallas area that, you know, just sort of given up buying stuff here locally, and they look at different markets across the country that do have higher cap rates. These are some pretty big, large-sized cities, you know. not a huge difference, but you know, maybe it might be easier to buy in a different market. And maybe that, maybe those markets are maybe in a different point in their development. Maybe we're at the near the end of a cycle, or in their the other markets are early in a cycle. It's really hard to say.
Yeah, I understand all that. I'd be curious to take the other side of that. I know another asset class the team invests in is retail. So you talked about the tailwinds pushing industrial, the changing way we do business, the changing way consumers buy and transact. And that's all great for industrial. And now take me to the other side of that chasm and let's look at retail. And we're seeing those tailwinds become headwinds in some ways. Certainly the pandemic was one, but also the acceleration of this change in the way we do business. How are you thinking about retail? Is that opportunistic or is it similarly a time to freeze investing?
Yeah, I think it's an opportunistic time for retail investment because for so long, retailers couldn't do anything. The restaurants weren't open. Some stores would only allow a certain number of people in at a time. And now there's kind of this awakening going on. And I think that certainly retail is in a different position than industrial is in on its cycle because, here we are. It's like, people are just getting a fresh restart. Maybe retail tenants are taking advantage of maybe restaurants that have gone dark and stepping into a space that's already partially finished out that they can use. And, of course, I'm not a retail expert, so I couldn't tell you what's going on. But I know our retail guys probably didn't do near the amount of business they would like to have done last year. And I think they're really starting to come alive so far in the last few months, just because of the pickup of activity and, people just getting back to business. And in retailers, they've been going through this change a long time. They've been going through the issue about online sales before the pandemic. So there's really not a huge surprise. It got hugely accelerated during the pandemic, but they were already having to do business differently before this all happened. So I think the retail type uses that you're going to see do well are going to be the restaurants, the things that the experiential type retail places that people want to walk in the store and they want to look and touch and feel, and you just can't do very well online. Or maybe it's a hybrid type of approach that some retailers have a lot of their business online, but there's also a part that maybe a smaller bit than they would have had in the past for people just to come actually see the product in person. The big boxes are, we'll say dying, but the big box stores are felt the worst of the pandemic and the transition to online sales.
Switching gears a little bit for this last segment, I'm sort of amazed at your experience. You said 36 years, you've touched so many different areas of the real estate ecosystem, leasing, property management, repping tenants and owners, now capital markets, transactions. What advice would you give to younger people entering the industry in terms of building a successful career in real estate, what you've learned, and specifically what you think the industry could use more of?
Some things will never change. And, I think technology might make parts of our job easier. When I got in the business, it was a luxury to have a fax machine. And now it's, everything is just things like DocuSign or just, for me, when documents have to get signed by multiple parties so frequently, things like that make our job easier. That's going to continue to change and evolve over time. But one thing that I would tell younger people getting in is never lose sight how important it is to be face-to-face with people, to meet people, just to get to know them, to form a relationship and understand them and understand what they like, what they don't like, and be kind, be nice, be fair. That's never going to go away. You can't replace that with a machine or technology. You have to have the skill to be able to form relationships. And, let's face it, any kind of sales is, people will go out of their way to do business with the people they like. And that's going to be no exception down the road, no matter how much this business changes. So I would just tell them to focus on being good folks and understanding how to form a relationship.
That's great advice, Jim. Well, thank you for your time and look forward to speaking again soon.
Okay, Vivek, happy to do it. I sure appreciate the opportunity. Thanks a lot.
That's it for today. Thank you for listening. And as always, a very special thank you to our guests. We'll be back soon, so please subscribe to Deconstructed on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. More details can be found at www.goworkspace.com/podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Workspace. Workspace has built a better way to manage real estate without all the clicks. With a suite of modern, intuitive products for commercial real estate operators, Workspace reduces the friction between assets, data, and people, allowing CRE professionals to streamline all their daily operations across property management, asset management, and beyond. Learn more at www.goworkspace.com.